The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
Hello and welcome to another Yes to Life show. I'm Robin Daly, and as usual, in this show I'll be investigating another strand of integrative medicine, a forward-looking and inclusive approach to cancer care that seeks to move away from the prescriptive and restrictive model of standard oncology by adding in a huge range of practices that are deemed helpful by patients. Integrative medicine is what patient-centered care looks like. Professor Katharina Packmann has a lab in Germany where she offers a range of tests for people with cancer that are currently outside the scope of conventional care in the UK. I want to know if there are any genuine reasons for people in the UK to be interested in paying for these tests and how they might affect the course of their treatment and the progress of their disease. Later in the show, I shall be speaking to someone who's built their program of treatment around these tests, but first, I'm speaking to Professor Packmann in Germany over Skype. Good morning, Katharina. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
Great. Well, we're talking about testing today, and on the face of it, testing has always seemed like a sensible option because it helps you to avoid the consequences of inappropriate treatment. But in reality, people can sometimes be sucked into spending considerable amounts on tests without having a clear idea at the outset of how this will benefit them. So would you say the tests that you're working with, the main track tests, have real-world benefits for anyone with cancer, or is there a balance of considerations to look at in each case?
Actually, we think that it would be helpful for every patient who has cancer at every stage of disease, and we can test the activity of the tumor and thus tell something about how to proceed during the further treatment.
How interesting. Okay, well, that's quite a blanket offering, so we're going to have to look at that in some detail and find out really why that's the case. So could we just start off by going a little bit into your background, if you wouldn't mind? Tell us a bit about your training and your area of expertise.
Okay, I have been working in hematology oncology for 40 years. Mm-hmm. And I started actually at the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm. And then I went further and did work at the University of Munich, where I was mainly doing leukemia research. Mm-hmm. We then noticed that you can very nicely see, if treatment works, how the leukemic cells disappear, and that this is prognostic also for the further course of disease.
Right.
So then I went to the MD Anderson in Houston, Texas, and learned a new microscope, which is able to find very rare cells. And there has been a long history of knowing that even solid cancers, which were first thought to be independent lumps just growing in the patient's body, that they are not independent, that they interact with the blood, they are nourished by the blood, but they can also shed cells into blood.
Right.
And using this microscope, we started to look for these rare cells and determine them during the course of disease. Mm. And we found that we indeed can monitor the activity of solid tumors and can track them during the whole course of disease.
I see, okay.
I finally went to, had a professorship at the University of Jena, where we did all these basic research on solid cancers, and now I'm retired and we have a laboratory here in Bayreuth where we serve patients.
Right. So not everybody's idea of being retired. Sounds like you're working.
I am. But no longer at the university.
I see,
yes.
Yeah. Okay, good. So, great. So this is a blood test that you're involved in. Maybe you just want to go into some more details of the actual test, what exactly you do.
Yeah. So it has long been assumed that these cells, which are shed by a solid tumor and reach the blood, that they are very rare. And other approaches were to enrich these cells, to find them. And we have seen that enrichment loses a lot of cells. So we decided to directly look at the cells in the blood without any enrichment. And we can find them, we can count them, and we can detect different properties of these cells and help to determine how active they are.
Mm.
And this is a sign that the tumor is more or less active.
I see. Just to go back on one word you used, you talked about enrichment. So you're saying this would be like culturing them, would it? Like, you know, growing them in the lab. Is that what you mean by enrichment?
There are different ways. Some just use magnetic bead coated antibodies, and these they are assumed to bind to the cells, and then you can draw them to a magnet. But as I said, this is a way to lose a lot of cells.
Mm.
So we don't want to lose any cells, we want to find them all. So we just do it like a blood count. We proceed as you would proceed for counting different cells in the blood, and we count the tumor cells that
right.
have reached the blood.
Right, I see. And so what you're counting for is you're saying that as against healthy cells, the proportion of tumor cells is, you know, 4% or something.
No, that's would be one way, but we are not interested in the healthy cells, not in the blood cells. We count them as a number in a certain volume of blood.
I see.
So it's counted against the volume of blood.
Mm,
and we just look for the tumor cells.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, and what's the process of looking for them? How do you do it?
So we take the blood. We just remove the red blood cells, which are interfering with our procedure. And then we add an antibody against, which is specific against epithelial cells. That's cells which should not usually be in blood. And they are most probably cells from the tumor. And these antibodies are stained with different fluorescing dyes. And then we can see cancer cells fluorescing in a fluorescence microscope.
Okay.
And we have an automated microscope, which has been, you can see them afterwards behind me. It's a completely automated machine.
Yes.
Which counts the cells per ml of blood, like it's done for other blood counting tests.
Right.
And we have shown that an increase in cell numbers, in tumor cell numbers, is correlated with an increased activity of the tumor and might be a sign that metastases are developing, but not the number by itself. It's just if it's increasing.
Right. So it's a bit like a PSA test. It's like Well, your PSA might be a bit higher than somebody else's, but if it's stable, then it's probably fine. But if it's increasing, you're in trouble.
Yeah, but it's earlier. You can see it much earlier because a rise in PSA mainly is due to cells dying and they release the PSA. But what we can see is already when the cells are growing because they are increasing in numbers.
Okay, and for anybody who doesn't know what a PSA test is, that's a prostate-specific antigen, which is the standard test for prostate cancer. Okay, very interesting. So now you said at the outset that, you know, you reckon this test is a benefit for to anybody at any stage. So any type of cancer, so this is, there's literally no kind of cancer which doesn't show up in the blood in this way.
Well, that's not completely correct because, well, cancers are epithelial tumors. So we can find all epithelial-derived cancers. But it's a pity that some, in some cases, if the cancers are very much advanced, they shut down their epithelial antigen. And this would be a case where we can't detect them anymore. But in most cases, especially during early stages and during a long durance of disease, we can find them. That's the only occasion where we can't find the cells, when they are very, well, they are no longer differentiated. They are very de-differentiated, and then they can shut down their epithelial antigen.
Right. So, but that's at a point at which other kinds of ways of detecting disease will be fairly easy to use anyway, because it's very advanced, yeah?
Yeah, because they are very advanced, they have often multiple metastases, and you can see how the metastases are increasing.
Yes, yeah, so show up on a scan. So, yeah, so this, you're saying this test is something you can use extremely early, much maybe before any other kind of test, would you say? It's like the first kind that would be useful to someone?
Yeah, but usually we recommend it to use it only if a tumor has been detected already.
Okay.
So it's not for screening or with very much restrictions, it would be useful for screening. So tumor needs to be diagnosed and then we can find the cells.
So can you tell me why? Why wouldn't it be a screening tool?
Because if you don't know whether there is a tumor present or not, you don't know whether the cells present really belong to a tumor. Uh-huh. And in addition, screening is a very difficult issue, as you know from other screening tests. So we don't want to use it as a screening test. We prefer to use it as a test to monitor the development of a diagnosed cancer and its response to therapy. The advantage is that you will find the cells in the blood or even after the tumor has been removed surgically.
Right.
So that's the situation where the tumor is no longer present, but these cells, in most cases, are still present, and it's those cells where the so-called adjuvant chemotherapy is directed against.
Yes.
And adjuvant chemotherapy is a therapy which is routinely used in breast cancer, and usually without knowing whether there are any tumor or cells left or not, and we can see the cells, and we can see how the therapy works on these cells.
Good. So that's a very useful application, because of course one of the biggest dangers is that, you know, even with quite early cancers, you have the surgery, everybody says, yeah, it's all clear, you're fine, and then 9 months later, sorry, you have a recurrence and you have secondaries.
But that's exactly that,
yeah,
yes.
You could tell the difference between a cancer that really had you done a good job and the surgery had actually removed it because the activity died down from then onwards, and one where it didn't.
Yeah,
Yeah.
That's correct. Often cells are left in the body. They are silent. They are the so-called dormant cells.
Mm-hmm.
They are not accessible to any therapy, but they are not not a threat at the moment if they are not reactivated by any event.
Right. So that's where looking after the environment of the body becomes important in terms of keeping that under control and keeping you safe from further spread.
Exactly. Mm. Yes.
Okay, great. Well, that's very helpful. Thank you. One of the important dilemmas facing people with cancer who are looking outside of UK conventional medicine and who are on a limited budget is that testing of any kind, really, on the one hand, it could provide a way of avoiding the cost of inappropriate and unsuccessful treatments, but on the other hand, the tests themselves are often costly, and that can actually eat into the budget that's available for treatment. So a crucial deciding factor is just how the quality of the results you get and just how useful they are. You've already said at the outset that you actually think this is something that's of benefit to all patients. Can we get an idea of, you first of all, you said it's for monitoring. So if monitoring means you don't just do it once. Essentially, you must do it at least twice and preferably more often. So how often do you actually recommend that somebody does it in order for it to be useful? And, for someone on a limited budget, how important is this related to spending money on the actual treatment?
Yeah, okay. So how often you should do it is dependent on what stage of disease the patient is in.
Right.
If it's planned or if chemotherapy at the moment is an option, then we would recommend to do the first test before starting therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And then about halfway through the therapy,
yeah,
so that you can see whether it works.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we have also seen that the cells, which the reactive cells are eliminated, but there remain cells, and they can regrow even during therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So if in some cases you go ahead with therapy, but still the cells start increasing again, the cell numbers. And here we have shown that this is of a poor prognosis, and the therapy is not sufficient.
Mm.
So you should even do a third test at the end or 2 to 4 weeks after the end of chemotherapy. Another question is maintenance therapy, for example, in breast cancer or in prostate cancer, where you give a hormone or endocrine treatment. You keep the cells at bay, you keep them low for a long time. Patients are treated for up to 5 years or even longer.
Yes.
And then it's sufficient to first do the reanalysis at 3 months, and if cells are silent and don't increase, you can even extend it to a 6 month or yearly testing.
Right.
So we have patients which we have monitored for up to 10 years during first endocrine treatment and then stopping endocrine treatment. And we can nicely see that the cells either remain silent or in some cases they start being reactivated and increasing again.
Right. So obviously your feeling about this is it's an essential monitoring tool, really. And if you were in this situation, if you were actually sick, you'd be doing plenty of monitoring using this test to find out whether your treatment was being successful, and then whether you were staying well subsequently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So some patients even like not to do the conventional treatment, but they use natural agents, other agents. We can test the effectiveness of these agents in addition.
Right. Okay, so that's definitely something I want to go into. Can I just finish on the question of whether to test or not to test first? So it's good that you've obviously made it very clear that this is a powerful tool for monitoring, and obviously, ideally, you would do it quite often. So can I have some idea of how much people are likely to spend, maybe, and having quarterly testing? How much would they spend in a year on doing it?
So it's £263, and in addition, the courier to send it to our laboratory.
Okay, so it's not too prohibitive. Some tests cost thousands, so that's a relatively cheap test, in fact, isn't it?
We try to keep it low in price to allow patients to afford it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's very important that we're clear then that this test is not a diagnostic test. You know, it's a bit like people talk about thermograms. They say, well, thermograms are useful because you can look at one and you can look at another one and see how somebody's condition has changed and what that tells you. But you wouldn't use it as a diagnostic tool because people can have a bit of a hot spot in a thermogram, which doesn't necessarily mean anything. It's their normal state of being. So this is why you would always look at it to monitor their progress, never as a diagnostic tool.
Yeah, we prefer to do the MindTrack as a monitoring tool and not that much as a diagnostic tool.
Yeah.
We can use it when we do additional tests on the cells, and we can then allocate the cells, whether they are derived from the female reproductive system or the male reproductive system. That's the main issues. It's difficult for colorectal because there are no markers for colorectal tumors where we could assign the cells to them. But in total, we use it as a monitoring tool.
Yeah, very good. Okay. So now there's another whole aspect to your test, which is because it's a monitoring tool, you can actually see the effect that a treatment is having on cancer cells.
Yes.
And whether it therefore is working or not. So this is very important, of course, because you know, you can have an apparently great treatment that's not the right one for you, and it's a complete waste of money. So first of all, there are conventional treatments, chemotherapy agents, and then there are natural agents which people are using against cancer. Does the test work just as well with either in terms of telling you whether it's working or not?
Yes, it does. So we monitor conventional treatments as well as natural treatments. And what is the other advantage is when we look for the cells, we are only looking for the cells that are alive. And we can then even add the drug in question to the cells in a tube,
yeah,
and then see whether this drug can kill indeed the cells. So we can already predict what agents are most possibly effective or not.
Hmm. So you're saying that, in fact, rather than necessarily somebody just saying, right, I've been prescribed this chemotherapy, is it going to work? You could actually take a sample and find out which chemotherapy would be likely to be most effective.
Yes, we can.
All right, so you would take a list of ones that were known to be useful in a particular type of cancer, and then you could test them all.
Yeah, or the physician asks us to test certain drugs, certain chemotherapeutics or other drugs or other substances to see whether they are effective against the cells of this individual patient.
Yes, so this is really personalized medicine as it's described.
We would claim that this is a real personalized test.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so in reality, there's actually, of course, there's an enormous number of potential avenues somebody could go down for treating their particular cancer. You know, if you look at all the more natural methods, integrative methods, as well as the chemotherapeutic methods, you have to narrow it down somewhat, otherwise the test would be enormous, of course. So what sort of basis do you go on? Say somebody comes to you and they say, right, I don't think there's much in chemotherapy for my particular condition here, I generally would like to pursue, at least for now, a more natural approach of using integrative methods. How do you narrow down the selection? Just on what the patient tells you they're interested in, or are you suggesting to them what they should look at?
No, in most cases, we test the drugs that the patient or the physician suggests would be most useful for them, or which they believe are most useful for them.
Right.
No, we do not, in most cases, we do not recommend any drugs. We can, in some cases, they ask us, and then we tell them what we have the best experience with, but we prefer the patients or the physicians to ask us which drugs to be tested.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
I should add that we can test also natural agents, which I included in the word drugs, but I've been told it's not usually used in the UK for natural agents,
correct,
the word drug.
Right. Yeah, okay, well, that's great. So if I'm in the UK here, I'm somebody with cancer, and I'm not an expert, as some people become, of course, on their own cancers. I'm relatively new to having cancer. My best course of action probably then is to go to an expert in the UK who will suggest the most likely approaches to be helpful, and then we can test those approaches against my blood.
That's what we do. Yes, that's what we recommend.
Yeah, okay, good. That's nice and clear. What I want to look at now is, well, here's the whole thing. Here I am. I am in the UK. I decided I want to have a test. How do I go about it? What happens?
Well, if you want to test it, you would best turn to the Academy of Nutritional Medicine. That's our partner in the UK, and they would organize everything. They send out the kit. They advise on phlebotomy services available, and they organize the courier to our lab.
All right, so that's quite straightforward. Okay, well, look, I'll make sure that for people who are interested, who are listening, that the link to the ANM is there available when the show goes out. Okay, well, that's great. And so basically, the sample gets taken, it's sent off to you. How long does it take before you get a result?
So sending takes, best is overnight, and it will arrive here. Best would be Monday or Tuesday taking blood.
Yeah.
And then when it has arrived at our lab, it takes 3 to 4 days for you to get the result. And we send a report of the results to AONM.
Right, so quite quick. And does it, obviously there's two different things you have there. One is just the general, the progress of disease, if you like, and the other one is testing against particular agents. So presumably it takes longer to test against a range of agents than it would to just know what your basic result was in terms of activity.
No, it can be done in 4 days too.
Right. Okay, great. Okay, that's all covered that. So now I want to ask a bit about kind of assurances, if you like, for the test. Is this test been approved, trialed? What's the status of the test in general terms?
Yeah. So we have an accreditation of ELAC and the German, that's the DAKKS, where we are accredited. And we have to pass the test every year.
Right.
The results of our clinical trials have been published in peer-reviewed journals. One of them, the Journal of Clinical Oncology of the ASCO, the American Society of Clinical Oncology.
Yeah.
We have about now we have in our trials we had about 1,000 patients tested in different trials, and we are still doing trials and publishing them.
Okay, so I mean, this is obviously, it's great. I mean, the difficulty with most testing is establishing a really a strong link between what you're finding out and real world, you know, what it really means in terms of the patient. So the fact that there are more cells, for example, actually does mean they've got a poorer prognosis, because you know things are not necessarily as simple as that in cancer, are they?
No, that's correct. Yeah, but. We have a high correlation, really, also in the conventional world, with increasing cell numbers, and then metastasis detected. And what we do is, when we see an increase more up to tenfold or repeated increases, we recommend to do imaging to find maybe a very small metastasis already. Just recently I had a patient and she had breast cancer and had chemotherapy, and then her cells started increasing again, and she had a PET CT done and they detected a brain metastasis, which would not have been, it was asymptomatic, it would not have been detected without our help.
Well, that's fantastic. Okay, this type of test, I've heard stories of it beginning to carry some weight with oncologists, which is great. You know, people turning up these tests and the oncologists actually taking it seriously. But, you know, I've also heard the opposite. So it's really important for people to establish really what their oncologist's response is going to be before they go and pay the money and take the trouble, because course, if you have a result that says no, you should do this different chemotherapy, and the oncologist says that's a load of nonsense, you know, you've wasted your money in a way. I'm just interested to hear how the standing is of your the main track test elsewhere in the world, you know, particularly Germany maybe, but you know, are other countries recognizing it as an established means of determining treatment and establishing the progress of disease?
So, you know, medicine is a slow-moving area, but in Germany, especially the specialist physicians increasingly use it, often still at the demand of the patients, but they increasingly see that it's really valuable for them, and that the that we don't test any, let's say, in chemotherapy, any strange drugs. We test the currently available drug or chemotherapeutics, and those which are known from experience to be effective also show up mostly effective in our patients. But in some cases, they don't.
Right.
And that we have also done a correlation to neoadjuvant treatment, you know, where you try to decrease the size of the tumor.
Right.
And our predictions are quite well fitting the results.
Right. Well, that's very interesting. I mean, of course, yeah, it's great when they have an established treatment which actually works well for most people. But if it doesn't work for you as an individual, it's completely useless. And finding out who those people are that it doesn't work for is hard, isn't it? Other than trying it. And unfortunately, trying it is a very grueling process quite often, because the treatments are very damaging and have many bad side effects.
Yeah, so it's still the decision of the patient and of the physician to do the treatment or not to do it. but they rely increasingly on our results.
So that's in Germany. How about in other countries? Has this made any inroads in America, for example?
Yes, it's increasingly also used in the United States. We have patients from all over the world. And one of the countries where we have also a lot of requests from is Australia. But it's at least 30 countries in the world where we get requests from.
And would you say the majority of the requests you had are the initiative of the patient or of the doctor?
Well, it's mostly the doctors who request it, but certainly often on demand of the patient.
Right.
The patients who want it to be tested.
Right.
Because they are the ones who are suffering from the therapy too.
Right. That's exactly right. This is one of the great things about the kind of patient revolution that's happening around the world, is that, healthcare is beginning to be patient-driven, which it should have always been, of course. It is for their benefit.
Yeah.
So the internet and social media has an awful lot to do with that fact. You know, this show, of course, is informing mainly the public about your service, about the fact that they could have a blood test like this. And, of course, that's a good thing, because it means that people can actually request more successful approaches.
Yes, and the patients often are very, very well informed, and they know increasingly their options.
Yeah, well, good. Yeah, it's the way to go. It's a sort of grassroots, ground up revolution in healthcare, and it can't come too soon, as far as I'm concerned.
I think so. Yes.
Okay, so lastly, I'd like to ask you, can you give us some sort of indication of what's in the pipeline regarding this type of testing? I'm sure there are things coming up which are not available yet, but are expected to be available shortly, which will be yet more sophisticated, more accurate. Can you tell us the directions that developments are taking us?
Yeah, I can. What we in the recent time do is we indeed try to grow the cancer cells in the lab. And what we see is it's not all of those circulating tumor cells which are able to grow. It's only a small fraction. And what they do is one cell divides and the daughter cells divide, so it forms a sort of sphere, and we can then find these spheres of cells containing like 6,200 cells, and we can count them, and we have also tested them for their properties, and they have the properties of the so-called tumor stem cells, or tumor initiating cells.
Yes.
And we have also already published that these spheres are tightly correlated to metastasis.
Right.
So patients with a lot of these sphere-forming cells have already metastasis. So if we think in the future, if we find patients with a lot of spheres, then we would recommend look whether there are already metastases growing. And these may in the future help, especially also in cases which I mentioned before, where the cells are already so dedifferentiated that they don't express the typical surface antigen anymore, but they are able to form these spheres. And then we can also test the spheres for their sensitivity to different agents. So that's in the pipeline.
Right. I mean, that's pretty important stuff, because, of course, those cells are the ones that really give the trouble. In a way, those are what people die from, aren't they? They are producing the secondaries, and they're often the things, as you described earlier, you can have an apparently quite successful treatment of some kind, maybe surgery, maybe chemotherapy, but it doesn't necessarily touch these cells at all, and then they're waiting there dormant to actually really get underway again once you finish the treatment. And so to actually be able to identify them first of all, and then to be able to identify how you might treat them, it could be extremely important for someone.
Yes, that's what we are aiming at.
Yeah, all right, well, that's very exciting. Okay, well, look, I'm going to leave it there. Many thanks indeed for taking time to talk to us about your work today, Katerina. It's been fascinating. Thank you.
Thank you very much for interviewing me. Thank you.
I thought it'd be helpful to add in a little real-world UK experience, so I called Paul Kiss, who kindly spoke to us from his car, about his experience with the main track tests. Hi, Paul. Thanks very much for agreeing to come on and talk a bit about your experience with the main track blood test.
You're welcome.
Okay, well, look, I've just been talking to Professor Katerina Packmann in Germany about the test, and I wanted to talk to somebody who'd actually used it and to find out how good a value they felt they had from it and how influential it was in their decision making.
The second time I got cancer, which was a year after the first time, I went down the main track blood test route. First of all, the main track circulating tumour cell count flagged up that I actually potentially had cancer. Okay. And then we went on to do, I call it a photo shoot as it were, to check that I did have it. I then used advice as it were, I suppose, when they tested a number of substances to check the effectiveness against my circulating tumour cells.
Okay.
I then took those substances. The cancer actually grew to start with, mm-hmm. and the circulating tumour cell count went from 500 to 1,000.
Yeah.
So it was a bit of a worrying time.
I'm sure.
Although the advice, and I've heard this elsewhere, that sometimes when the circulating tumour cell count increases and the tumour grows, it's a sign that it's about to collapse. So while I was getting a lot of other advice from other people, I sort of stuck with it.
Okay.
And 3 months later, having taken the various substances, if you will, my circulating tumour cell count dropped from 1,000 to 100.
Wow.
And my tumour shrank from, it went from 8 to 12 down to 8 mil. At that stage, I started to identify other substances, because I think I'm a great believer you can keep changing track, if you see what I mean, because cancer becomes immune to what you're using. So I'm now taking a slightly different approach, again, using the main track, reporting, as it were.
Yes.
So I'm still in the process. The cancer's now gone because I was able to use I used a touch radiotherapy called Papillon. Mm-hmm. So at this moment in time, I'm officially clear of cancer, but my circulating tumour cell count is still around the 100 mark. So my plan is to seek a more intensive treatment to, shall we say, kill the circulating tumour cells. So the last thing I want, actually, is the cancer to return.
Oh, absolutely.
And so that's effectively what I'm in the process of doing now.
Mm. Well, it sounds like the test has been absolutely central to your decisions because, it told you might have cancer in the first place. It then told you what you were going to do in the way of treatment, and it's also told you not to ease up just because you've been given the all clear. So really a very important tool to you, I'd say.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The 3 points you make are, well, they're spot on, and I think the most important one is not to ease up, because if you've got time for this, I had cancer last year.
Yeah.
I didn't use the main track approach. I used an OASIS protocol from Mexico,
mm-hmm.
and that worked. It was successful. It included a no-dose chemotherapy.
Yeah.
My cancer again shrunk from 35 mil to 15. We then used, I'm not sure of the term actually, I used to call it a melon scoop, basically, where you scoop what was left of it out. Unfortunately, with any form of local operation, I wasn't taking any substances whatsoever.
Right.
I didn't do any circulating tumour cell counts of that nature. And, you know, I was, shall we say, skipping around this time last year thinking I haven't got it.
Right.
And unbeknown to me, because I'm not a circulating tumour cell count test, I had got it. And sure enough, in March, there I was with an 8 mil tumour again. So I'd say the circulating tumour cell count, it's a really useful tool. In terms of interpreting it, again, that's a skill I don't have. I've been relying on MainTrack to interpret the results for me.
Right. Okay, well, that's fantastic. It's been really useful to hear about that. And just the last point, so all the things you described as substances, you're actually using all non-orthodox approaches. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, okay. Well, no, that's been really helpful, Paul. Thank you very much indeed. That's all we've got time for, but it's been a great addition to the show. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you.
As I said at the outset of my interview with Professor Pachman, testing's always been a good idea, in theory at least. But it does sound very much indeed as though these tests can work out well in practice, in terms of the information they offer and their cost to patients. If you'd like to access links to material relevant to today's show, go to yestolife.org.uk and click the Yes to Life show logo on the homepage. We always aim to make the show interesting and useful to anyone with cancer or working with cancer, and I hope today's show was no exception. I'll be back at the same time next week to introduce another expert guest to you. Goodbye. Thank you.